and you're listening to The Seventh Reel. This week, 2011's Melancholia, directed by Lars von Trier, recommended to us by our guest host, Rachel. Rachel, would you like to introduce yourself? Actually, I don't understand how introducing yourself will elaborate this to the audience whatsoever. But okay, Rachel, why did you pick this?
I picked this movie because it's the most accurate portrayal of depression and anxiety that I've seen. I haven't seen as many movies as you guys have, but it's definitely the most accurate portrayal I've seen. I saw it about 4 years ago, and it's stuck with me ever since.
When did you first see it? Like, under what occasion did you, like, oh, I'm just going to watch this?
Yeah, I got it from the public library.
What?
I just picked it up. The cover appealed to me. I brought, it was just my mom and I.
You watched this with your mom?
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
And we watched it, and I will never forget the moment where the final scene happens, and it goes to black, and my mom turns around and looks at me from the couch ahead of me, like, why did you do this to me? But, like, on one hand, it's super depressing. It leaves you feeling gut-punched.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, it's, especially for someone who's gone through, like, a depressive episode, it's somehow comforting in the same way. Like, it's just one of those movies that really
understands.
Gets what you're going through and understands.
Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah.
So, it's a very special movie as well as a mega, mega depressing one. I've always said, too, it's kind of like Inside Out.
For
depressives.
For, like, real. Well, it's interesting how you brought up Inside Out, considering there's, like, you know, Inside Out is like, all these characters, like, these emotions are characterized, right? I would say, in this case, anxiety and depression are both characterized through these siblings, these
exactly.
sisters.
And just, like, as a diagnosis, they're sisters. Depression is kind of one side of the coin. Anxiety
mm-hmm.
is the manifestation of all those feelings in a different way, so...
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
This is so, having not seen any of Lars von Trier's other stuff, would you be interested in watching more of his stuff?
Oh, absolutely. It's just, yeah, when you're feeling like you need a good cathartic moment, I watch Melancholia, so I'd be definitely interested in seeing his other. I hope they're as visceral as Melancholia.
More so. More
Ooh.
So. Yusa, have you seen any other Lars von Trier movies?
I watched Nymphomaniac and
The
House
that
Jack Built. But both because
I think he has two
other
movies,
people
like depressed and horny.
But yeah, I always like just assumed he was like a very dark, like kind of too dark for my taste, like almost like it would trigger something, so I would worry about watching these movies. But this one was a very, like, I don't know, like it's definitely cathartic.
It's easiest to watch.
Yeah.
Out of his recent, like, recent films.
Mm-hmm.
Like, let's say Antichrist is horrible. Do not watch Antichrist. It's
yeah.
it's this bit worse, like twice as more, even more violence, more depression,
mm-hmm.
more screaming. this is part of his. This is the middle of his depression trilogy. So this is there's Nymphomaniac.
So
if you see like her that drive as like depression, I think that kind of gels. Yeah, this is his most accessible. And I would highly recommend that you watch his earlier stuff before this,
okay.
then go straight into his, because like the house that Jack built is almost impossible to recommend to average moviegoer.
Well, earlier you said that it's about building a house out of corpses.
There's that in it, yeah.
There's that.
But it's also like a meta film. Like by the end, it becomes a deconstruction of his films. It kind of goes up, he goes up his own butt, I think, by the end.
Oh. But the visual side of it, like, I think what makes this movie works is how beautiful everything is, like,
yes.
just visually. Mm-hmm. Like, the scenes when they're kind of, you know, riding the horses and the camera pans through the sky.
Oh, yeah, it's beautiful.
Them,
yeah.
You see the fog and the nature that surrounds them.
Mm-hmm.
So I think what makes this go down easier is kind of that. Like, it's beautiful. Every shot is
right.
beautiful.
I also really like how he uses... the, like, in terms of like the cinematography, like for example how the film opens and it's that really woozy handheld filming style.
Very
yeah.
yes.
It immediately you feel unsettled.
Yes. And those zooms.
And the zooms.
And those crazy zooms.
Yeah. I feel like right from the beginning he's building that sense of like that suspension of belief that you get when you're going through a depressive episode.
Mm.
Like the filming's all wrong.
Mm.
It's just silent in the beginning.
Do you like the juxtaposition? Because like the opening sequences are like almost painterly, right? It cuts to the painting and everything's completely still, but then the rest, when the story is actually going on, it's frenetic and handheld and
a lot
looser.
Yeah, I love that. It all kind of culminates to create that sense of things are not right.
Right.
And even in the, I noticed there are specific points in the wedding.
Yeah.
That contributed to that. Like the bean lottery, people's guessing beans that were like numbers that were just outlandish. Like the husband was like 2 million beans. Or the fact there was two Bettys sitting at a table. It was like just contributing to that feeling that I noticed like often a lot of depressed people can get, where it's like you, the viewer, or the depressed person is aware that something's not right, or they feel like something is not right, but no one else seems to notice. That's what I got out of that. I thought that was...
No, I get that, like kind of, why are they making a big deal out of this? Because you can't really understand in that moment. And it's like, because just beans and a thing. And then they're like, this is really important, but it's just...
Yeah, like, things that just do not matter.
What do you two girls, you both like horses, think about that scene when Kirsten Dunst just going ham on that horse? It's literally beating a
terrible
horse.
It was terrible. I wanted the horse to kick her off.
I don't know. It's just, this whole movie's just Depression Simulator 2011, where it's people just start, I love that scene as much as it's terrible, because she's so frustrated and she's just, you just see that rage that builds up. Oh, I'm just going to say, and I think it's especially powerful too, especially since within the next few scenes, she just enters that like catatonic state.
Right. Mm-hmm. She's dead. When, like, when they're trying to force her to just take a bath, and she's just, I don't want to, like, wow, like that's crazy.
Yeah.
No, I didn't know, because you know where the horse wouldn't go any further on that bridge, and then the golf car wouldn't go any further?
Yeah.
What was that about? Like, why?
I think it's trying to represent how, like, you just can't...
escape?
Like, you can't, or you can't move forward. It's just like how she can't get into that bathtub, horse can move forward, the golf car can't move any further.
And also the bridge seemed to be leading towards the village, so it was almost like... they were being contained in that estate, and they're being contained in their respective states of depression and anxiety.
Mm. You girls are getting much better reads on this than I am. Because when you brought up the camera work, I was like, oh wow, I didn't really even really think about that. Because all I could think about when he starts doing that, I was like, oh, this is rather similar to his earlier films, because he's part of a Danish collective, right?
Yeah, the Dogma 9-to-5, where it was all about like, trying to make everything as naturalistic as possible. So like really shaky, handheld, natural light. And like the earlier films are kind of awful to watch because they don't look nice and they're really shaky.
Yeah.
But this really balanced it and made it like useful to the film and not just be like, I'm just breaking the rules of cinema to see what happens.
Right.
He's really using it for a purpose.
Point to it.
Yeah.
Right.
Like, he's not afraid to use music when he needs to, when it really applies.
Right. And I think that reminds me of another point. I've seen, like, reading reviews online, I see a lot of people saying that the first half of the movie, like, the part one Justine, was pointless, or at the very least, way overstretched.
I don't think so.
I don't think so either. Like, I mean, sure, like, the opening point, the opening scene of parking the limo was, like,
That's
felt
awesome.
Like 15 minutes. Yeah,
That's
also.
It's so funny to me.
But... and I think, like, I'd argue it really doesn't matter that nothing much happened in the first half. That's not the point, exactly. This movie, it could have easily been replicated against another setting. I think it was perfect that it was a wedding, because it really shows how divorce just
being
is from reality. Yeah.
Everyone's like, but she's like, I'm smiling through this thing. And they're like, well, it doesn't fucking matter. Like,
yeah.
And that scene, and the people, when Kiefer Sutherland's like, do you know how much you spent on this? Let's make a deal. Like, you
be happy.
And then she's just like, oh my God. She just feels completely lost.
It's like
he's
asking the opposite
defeated.
Word of her.
Like, she's completely defeated. And she's like, yeah, sure. Like, let's do it. And Kiefer Sutherland is just being a dick and just not understanding whatsoever, like, what he's going through. He's great, because that's perfect.
Oh, he was so
that's
good
perfect
in this
Kiefer Sutherland.
I've only ever seen Kiefer Sutherland
in 24. I only know him in 24.
I'm like Lost Boys.
Oh shit, that's right.
Yeah.
He is in Lost Boys. I forgot about that.
Well, you know what I didn't pick up on that is that he committed suicide. I thought the horse kicked him, and I'm like an idiot.
Oh, actually?
Now.
She went and checked the pills.
It was
like that damn horse.
You heard her go like, why did you kill yourself? Why did you take the pillow?
I was like, this makes no sense. Oh, she just God. Let the horse go and covers him up. That,
I mean, the horse, they were acting pretty weird, so. I don't blame you.
We haven't even talked about, like,
the plot?
The science fiction, I guess the science fiction element of it.
Because that's it's a story about depression and anxiety, which incidentally happens to take place at the end of the
world. I think that's fantastic. Yeah. Like, when they, it's like, oh, they could go into the scientific mumble jumble. Thank God he doesn't. All they did was, like, the circle, like, the metal circle.
Oh.
And that is a strong enough a metaphor to just carry the rest of the film. Like, it's
yes.
getting bigger, and there's nothing
you
can do.
But is that not, like, a metaphor for depression anyway?
Yeah.
It's
just weighing down.
Especially
and kind
for
of
anxiety,
bigger.
Too.
Yeah. And how she just gets more frustrated, like...
And frantic.
And frantic. The two sides, the two sisters, right? Like, oh, it's so
I
great.
I loved how it switched from Justine not caring enough in the first half
to her just
to
accepting it. She's
accepting it. She's finally the one who's, like, thriving.
It does incorporate a very Lars von Trier line when she goes, like man is evil. It's like humanity, everything. Like, evil exists. We as people are evil, so...
Mm-hmm. No one will miss us.
Yeah, and maybe we deserve to get wiped out. it's very... Kirsten Dunst putting in a career-defining performance,
mm-hmm.
unfortunately derailed by... did you know about this?
Amy Schumer.
No, not Amy Schumer, but
oh.
Lars von Trier himself. When this film premiered at Cannes, there was a press conference, and von Trier, in his... I don't know what went through his head. He started making this allegory by describing how he understands Hitler as, like, an allegory for, like, understanding evil. And then he kind of, as the crowd begins shifting uncomfortably, he kind of digs himself further and further into all by trying, like, to elaborate. And you can see Kirsten does kind of, like, grab his arm and go, like, Lars, please,
shut
like, shut up. Like, just stop. He just kept going. It's
oh
the best.
God.
You need to follow that clip on YouTube afterwards.
Oh,
it's so funny.
That. Cause, oh my god.
Cause she was
no.
so good in this. We previously watched Virgin Suicides and Marie Antoinette.
Oh.
She's fantastic.
Is she
that.
Okay? Cause she plays a depressed person way too
I think it's just being it's just being an incredibly good actress. And,
yeah, she's
and very underrated, I think. She's very remember her in Fargo season? She was so good in Fargo
season. Oh yeah,
season
she was great in that.
Yeah,
yeah
with Jesse Plemons. Oof, and her real life husband. And then Power of the Dog recently. She just does this thing. She just does depressed so well. If you watch Power of the Dog, she's basically tapped into the same energy here. What a stacked cast for the first half. Alexander Skarsgård, both Skarsgård, Skellen Skarsgård as her boss. That's Alex's dad. John Hurt as her dad, and Charlotte Rampling. Insane cast. I was like, wow, I didn't know.
Yeah.
I forgot all of these people are here. And then they all left. And I love how the second half just drastically shifts. What a wonderful film.
It was really good.
What did you think, though, for a film about depression?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, should it have a more hopeful ending?
No.
But also, it's you're viewing it in the worst, darkest case of depression, they kill themselves, and then that is their release.
Mm.
She was getting that gift from Melancholia.
Is it not indicative
that
Kiefer Sutherland's the only character who actually commits suicide?
Ooh, that's a good question.
Right? Because the moment he realizes, he doesn't even tell his wife and kids. He just goes and he kills himself. And
he
like,
uses all the pills.
And he uses
and
all the
too.
Pills!
I never thought of that. Selfish.
That's so selfish. And it's so cool how like in the first act, he's like snapped out of it. You guys like, he's getting so angry. I paid so much money for this.
Mm-hmm.
And then like, he's the first one to take the easy way out. While Kirsten Dunst
is
like, no,
thought that's
this
a good
is,
point.
Well,
this is
I mean,
how it's supposed to
we're
end.
We're completely dismissing my theory of the horse force feeding him the pills. And then... escaping.
He's like, let me live. And a horse is like, nay.
You guys are overlooking a great reading here. But okay.
I mean, I think we've completely misread this.
The Buncher, one day listened to it. He's like, yeah, finally, somebody got this. That's how I was going for all along.
Wait, does anyone know his name? The guy?
Oh my
oh,
god, he's Simon? Like...
Oh, Kiefer Sutherland.
They don't barely...
If it's Isaac, then...
No, I think he does call his name.
Then that's a biblical allegory. Because Abraham, like, was going to kill his son Isaac. but then doesn't do it. But I bet it's not that clever.
It's Wikipedia.
John.
As we
it's
speak.
John.
Oh.
Unfortunately.
And that's just the perfect name for him.
He's just John.
He's just John.
What did you? It's so cool how like it is like separated into two chapters because that's something he does multiple times. I think he does that in Nymphomaniac.
It's
just
it's
two parts, and Hell's of Jack Build is just multiple chapters on his various victims, the serial killer's various victims. Very literary. Makes me.
It's very art historical.
Wait, what are you talking about? Art.
What is the loads of art?
Oh yes, the art. Yeah.
Like multiple.
This the Ophelia is the poster.
Yeah, and then
the painting in the beginning, they also, it's cool, I just knew that painting because they cut to it in Tarkovsky's Solaris. I didn't even know what it really was, but that was yeah, and the beginning is all paintings, right? I think with all those the slow motion. I'm trying to think of like another potential read we can like get into here.
Well, speaking more about the structure, what did you guys think of him like deliberately showing you the ending in the beginning?
Ooh, yeah. I
didn't inevitability. Understand. I think he sees it as like if like when you're depressed, like the idea of everything ending is already accepted, just like how she's completely accepted that we're all gonna die by the second act. The second part. The opening is like a prelude to understanding her mindset, right? Because like you see Charlotte Rampling, not Charlotte Rampling. Her sister grabbing the sun, like trying to get away, but she's just there, she just stands, she's accepted it already. I think that's already cluing you in terms of like these are the two sides, the anxiety and the dark, and like just a spiral
the
into
two
like
sisters.
Not caring anymore, not like this is it, I don't like we're gonna die, that's fine by me.
And from a musical standpoint, it was like at a beginning of a play or an opera where the suite
overture.
Happens.
It's an overture. That's
an overture.
Right. That's the word.
I love that.
Was it? It's
Tristan and
Isolde.
Yeah, it's Wagner, which is quite interesting.
No one does depressing music like the Germans.
Oh, and they will know. They will know a thing. They will know a thing or two about it.
I liked it too. On one hand, it's a nod towards Justine's assertion later on in the movie that she almost knows what's coming.
Mm-hmm.
And then B, I like it because it also contributes to that sense, like what I was talking about earlier, like it's time stripped of meaning, things aren't happening in a linear way. Just like when you're going through that kind of catatonic depression.
The end is always in sight. The end.
It's like time has stopped also.
Exactly. Nothing, yeah. A wedding stripped of joy, time stripped of meaning.
I like when she goes like, I'm smiling, like trying. Like,
do
and
you
then,
want
like,
for me?
And everybody is still so mean to her.
I know, and so oblivious to her. Like,
I love that, especially the husband. Especially
the husband.
He just doesn't care, he just doesn't know.
That wedding speech just made me want to crawl in a hole. Because he just got off like, he just Googled like wedding speech. Like it shows like from her perspective, everything is so cold and
detached. Yeah, he's perfectly cast as, and by the end when they don't even have like this big fight to separate. He just goes like, I guess we just take off then. And that's it. And she doesn't pry any further. And he doesn't try any further. I think that's amazing.
I love that.
That's
just
so
shows everyone's just numb. Or she's just numb.
Or he just does. And he doesn't care. And he's completely ambivalent. Yeah. Fantastic movie. Will you recommend this to anyone, Rachel?
I think if you're in a precarious state of mind, maybe sandwich it with some Disney movies.
Wow, I can't wait to go from Bambi to Melancholia. Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs to Melancholia.
Or at least an early 2000s rom-com. Oh, Bring It On.
Bring It On. The two types of
the last time Kirsten Dunst was documented on film, to be happy.
To be happy? No, Spider-Man.
Oh, true.
She's great in Spider-Man. Oh, she had to do so much heavy lifting the scripts for so hokey back then. Yeah.
But no, I would definitely recommend it. I don't know anything about, cinema studies or movies, but it was so powerful. I'll never forget the moment where Claire holds
the
device up to Melancholia and it's bigger. I'll never forget the
zooms,
way my...
And it zooms.
And it zooms.
And it's fantastic.
I never
will
forget the
sense.
Way my stomach dropped. And no movie has ever done that to me.
That's awesome. All right. Shall we take a break?
Let's do it.
Let's.
Yeah.
Let's. forgoing our usual Rate the Real segment, considering there's only one film, Rachel has to leave us due to professional obligations. She has to go to work. I don't know why I said that. But that brings us to our, what have we watched this week? What have we watched this week?
Ooh, I've got an answer, but it's a ranty answer.
You got an answer? Yeah. All right, bring
okay,
it.
Okay, so I watched Mythic Quest on Apple TV.
Jesus
and
Christ,
I hated it so much.
It's the Rob I never know how to pronounce his last name.
It stinks. It's so mediocre.
It stinks.
It's so hard to like even...
Do you think I'll get more out of it considering I know a lot about video games?
I don't think... No, I think it'll be insulting to you. I think you'll be like, this is not
really?
What we're all like. Like, this is like taking all the stereotypes and like turning it up and then being like... run through a Disney filter and then being like a little edgy because it's Always Sunny guy. I've watched all of Superstore, so mediocrity is not like an issue for me. But
I'm sat through the entirety of Modern Family.
But arguably those shows have like some jokes. This, I don't know, it's got like some jokes, but it feels like it was done on autopilot when someone was like, okay, they give us a bunch of money and we just gotta put something in.
I saw some clips with Danny Pudi's character and he feels like a parody of like a character on Community.
Yeah.
Like it's like just the way
honestly,
talks,
well,
like,
so, see what I did was like I feel like I'm framing it like I'm some media scientist, but I just watched like an episode of Community after, and I was like, oh, okay, so I'm not just insane, this is better, and it's not like all sitcoms are terrible, this was just very, I don't know, it was really average.
All right, I will avoid it like the plague.
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't say that, it's good to, I guess you could put it on the background, I don't know why. I was just surprised.
I just know one of the actors in it is actually like a pretty good voice actress, and they're like, "Oh, she's in this." As in, it's odd, it's a bit weird.
Yeah. Well, I just thought being the guy who did the Sunny show and I thought it would be a little better. So I went in expecting more. So that was it.
Cool. What have we watched?
Well, we watched. They call it Charlotte, but it should have been called Charlotte. Mm-hmm. It's about this artist from like the 30s and 40s called Charlotte Solomon, who was a German artist who she was killed in the Holocaust when she's like 26. But before she died, she did this gigantic work of like 1,200, literally like pieces of paper that is essentially documenting her life, and it's called Life or Theater. And it's by the same people who did Loving Vincent, and which, you know, it's the same issues with Loving Vincent, and that like this completely ignoring the art for the sake of a story that isn't that good.
To preface this film is like animated, but the animation does not even try to reach like the artistic merits of like the artist's actual work. Yeah.
Because she's like an expressionist. And it's just really plain, simple animation. It's not even very good.
It's not even very good. There's no reason it justifies itself being animated.
It's just the same color palette. That's the only reason.
And they also make these wild reaches as to like her actions that, if not true, comes across as incredibly offensive to the portrayal of this like real life this real life girl who died. Like in the Holocaust, like, wow, you made her do this? That's crazy if it's not true. Yeah, thoroughly mediocre.
Yeah. And like even the animation, like her bedroom that was supposed to be in like the early 30s looked like an IKEA bedroom.
They didn't care.
And then all the outfits were not period appropriate. Oh, hair wasn't period appropriate.
And, like, it's a cartoon, so who cares?
I care.
Exactly.
Like, you know, it's just ruining for me because I'm just like, this is not authentic. Mm-hmm. She wouldn't have worn this. She wouldn't have looked like that.
Yeah.
But
takes you out of it.
Oh, I forgot to mention last week, we watched Passion of the Christ on Easter.
Oh.
It was horrible. There is a shot of the Jewish priest throwing a pouch of silver towards Judas, and it's done in, like, literally Zack Snyder slow-mo. of them throwing it at the pouch at the camera, and I wanted to gift it because it's so over the. Even Zack Snyder, if he shot, I'd be like, okay, let's take a step back. I mean, this is a little bit too on the nose, but no, Mel went for it, and it's terrible. I did not like this movie one bit.
You know what would be a good episode is if we watched The Passion of the Christ and The Last Temptation of Christ.
Yeah, see, oh my God. Yusuf, did you know that the shot in Passion of Christ where the knee
I've actually never seen it.
Jesus' hand is Mel's own hand. And he made this big statement about, that's my sins I'm bearing.
I've never seen both of those movies.
So stupid.
Not a big religious movie.
One's worth watching. One is worth watching. The other is not. All right. This moves us to our recommendations.
Mm-hmm. Oh, Yusuf? It's, well, we should... say Rachel's recommendation.
Rachel's recommendation
Inside
would be
Out. That's mine. That, Inside Out. I mean, we could guess.
She mentioned these two films.
Yeah.
We can guess
based on what she said.
It'll probably be
and,
Inside Out, Brain On.
What little I know of her. But my recommendation would have to be Knowing. Nicolas Cage is Knowing.
Said
oh yeah, I should have said
Nicolas Cage is Knowing. Oh my God.
Oh my God.
Same director as The Crow.
Yeah, great movies, both of them.
Great movies.
Well, I haven't watched Knowing since it came out, and when it came out, I was probably 14 or something, and
there's some cool scenes in there. There's some, like,
yeah, so
yeah, there's a cool plane crash sequence I liked. It has the exact same ending as Melancholia, now I think about it, but
great recommendation.
Yeah, great recommendation. That's fantastic.
Mother, though.
You should have said Mother. Have
too bad.
My recommendation is my favorite Von Trier film, Europa. This is Von Trier, I think at his best, before like being Lars von Trier, the idea of being Lars von Trier completely consumed him. This is a lot less pretentious, but equally interesting in terms of the ideas that it brings forth. One of the better films I would recommend about post-war Germany and like how this populace dealt with like this guilt. Beautiful music, beautiful cinematography. That's my recommendation. Michelle?
I'm just gonna say Black Swan.
Black Swan's a good recommendation.
Love Black Swan.
Yeah.
When you get to that one day.
Darren Aronofsky and Lars von Trier, I bet they would get along.
They probably wouldn't like each other. Because they're so distinct and they all want to do
They both like scars.
Because you know how Jennifer Lawrence left Darren Aronofsky because he wouldn't shut up.
Yeah,
you
told me that. Yeah, what did you expect?
I was like, oh, fantastic. What did you expect dating him? This guy wears so many like a billion scarves. He'll never shut up about movies. All right, that brings us to
what we're watching.
Our next week's picks.
So. Next week, we're watching Glengarry Glen Ross. That's one movie, not a movie called Glengarry, and then another movie called Glen Ross. And the other one is Malice. They both star Alec Baldwin, and they're both written by writers famous for their dialogue and the ability to craft some really interesting monologues. And both writers have very different and controversial political views, so maybe that'll also factor in, but it's interesting. I'm excited.
You know, Alec Baldwin doesn't actually star in Glengarry Glen Ross.
Yeah, well, he sort of, but yeah, he's like the most famous.
What a scene it was.
But I guess the movie is more that other guy and Kevin Spacey's. Well, we'll talk about it when we watch
Yes.
it, but, yeah.
We'll talk about it more once we get
Kevin
to next
Spacey,
week.
Disgraced pedophile. and we should...
we just have to preface this.
We should
this.
Advertise the movie this way.
Okay. Well, that brings us to the end of this week's episode. Thank you very much for tuning in. Keep it real. Brah, brah.
Okay, bye.
Bye. The 7th Reel is hosted by Arvin Huang, Michelle Hassel, and Yusuf Al-Bashir. Logo by Joe Conti. Our ad break music is composed by Yusuf Sui Lim, and our outro music is composed by Yahya Al-Bashir. Thanks for listening.